Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is a special edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast. January 22nd, 2021, following the death of Hall of Famer Henry Aaron. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Well, this is what a lot of fans remember most about Henry Aaron. April 8th, 1974, when he broke Babe Ruth's all-time home run record of 714.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. Moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep south for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron.
His career stats are unbelievable. 755 home runs at the end of his career. 2,297 RBI, that's the most all-time, 2,174 runs, 3,771 hits, that's right. If you take away the home runs that he hit, 755, he still had more than 3,000 hits. He stole more than 20 bases six different times in his career. He won three gold gloves, 13 different times. He finished in the top 10 in the MVP voting, but there was so much more to him than the numbers, and today we'll talk about that.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Tim Kirkchin covers baseball for ESPN, and Bob Kendrick, of course, the president of Negro Leagues Museum. And Bob, I've had you on the podcast a number of times, and you've talked about how you know, not only was Henry Aaron a great player, but he was your hero, and you got to walk him through your establishment. Just when you heard the news today, what was your feeling?
Devastated. I still am. You know, you obviously have to try and move into a mode of professionalism. This is part of the job. And sadly, Buster, it is part of the territory. You know, in this work that we do at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, we experience great loss. We had a lot of loss last year of those who were friends, dear friends of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. It never gets any easier. But with Henry Aaron, this loss is even more deeper and in many ways even meaningful to me, just because of the fact that he was my all-time favorite baseball player and he was my childhood idol as a kid growing up in small town Georgia, Crawfordville, Georgia, all of about 500 people, about 80 miles east of Atlanta, 50 miles west of Augusta. And so anytime that we were on the playgrounds, as most kids do, you wanted to be your favorite baseball player. So everybody already knew that I was going to be Henry Aaron, and no one else could be Henry Aaron. And so to get the opportunity to meet your idol, and he never stopped being that for me. Even though we had countless opportunities to spend time together, he was still that guy for me. And every time I was around him, I was reduced to that almost 12-year-old kid that circled the bases in his mother's living room in 1974. So when Henry Aaron hits home run number 715 in Atlanta's Fulton County Stadium, he's circling the bases, and I'm circling the bases in my mother's living room. And so her old couch buster was first base. She had an old TV that was second base, another old couch that was third base, and her recliner was home plate. And so as my childhood idol was touching them all, I'm touching them all as well. And I got to share that story with him, and he just smiled. But he meant the world to me. He meant the world to this museum, the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. He is one of those iconic figures that had the opportunity to transition out of the Negro Leagues and become an icon in the major leagues. And in many ways, he validates the other heroes of the Negro Leagues. And so this is a tremendous void that we will never be able to fill here at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and throughout the Negro Leagues family.
Tim, I know you have a distinct memory, I'm sure, of when he hit number 715 off Al Downing. Tell us about that, and also tell us about when you got to share the broadcast booth with Mr. Aaron.
Right. Well, I was 17 years old when Hank hit number 715. I will never, ever forget that moment and everything surrounding it. And my brothers and I just kept saying, what if he does it tonight? It's on national TV. And then, of course, he did. So fast forward many years later, this is several years ago, Hank Aaron did a game in our booth with Dave Fleming, Eduardo Perez, and me. Four innings he did, an hour and a half sitting next to Hank Aaron. It was the greatest day of my entire professional career. I have covered baseball for 41 years and nothing matches that. He was so funny. He was so gentle. He was so kind. His recall was amazing. There wasn't any question that we asked that he had trouble with. It was incredible. Buster, it's the first time I ever stopped scoring a game that I was covering because I was no longer interested in the game because I was so enamored sitting next to Hank Aaron. So after the game, sorry, I should never read Twitter, but after the game, some guy writes on Twitter, he says, if you ever meet anyone in your life who looks at you like Tim Kirkchin looked at Hank Aaron, you should marry that person. That's how special it was for me, sitting next to Hank Aaron, and Bob and you and Buster and everyone else who's ever met him has the same feeling. Just talking to that man was so, so good.
Bob, Buster and Tim, when we had him here, Major League Baseball brings him here for his first visit, and the Kansas City Royals played host. They're celebrating the 25th anniversary of him breaking Ruth's record. And so they bring him here to the museum. And man, I'm a nervous wreck. I really am. I'm laying out everything at home. Everything's got to be just perfect. My wife looks at me like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, look, you don't understand. This is Henry Aaron. And so we get here. They get me mic'd up. I'm wired. And my heart is pounding. Now, you got to understand, guys, we've had two American presidents visit this museum. We've had dignitaries as, you know, the likes of General Colin Powell, first ladies, all kinds of athletes and entertainers. And as I oftentimes say, with no disrespect to any of them, they are not Henry Aaron in the eyes of this kid from Crawfordville, Georgia. And so I'm a nervous wreck, man. And we get wired up and I'm taking him through the museum. We get to a photograph. It's that classic photograph of him. I know you guys have both seen it, where he's standing at the train station in Mobile, about to go leave to join the Indianapolis Clowns. And of course, before he was known as Hammer and Hank, his nickname was Pork Chops. And we said, Mr. Aaron, why did they call you Pork Chops? He said, I guess that was all I knew how to order off the menu. So all he ate was pork chops and fries. And so we took him on the tour. We finished the tour. We go across the street to the Gym Theater. And so two of my very good friends in the media industry, Jason Whitlock and Joe Posnanski, they lead a fireside chat with Henry Aaron. The theater is filled to the rafters. And you know, fellas, it took him almost 25 years before he could actually exhale and celebrate what many thought to be the greatest sports accomplishment of all time. Well, after this riveting conversation, we go up to the mezzanine level, Tim, and I get to sit down with Henry Aaron, his wife, Billy, and a platter of Gates barbecue ribs. And so me and my idol are eating ribs together. It doesn't get any better than that, you know, and every time I'm around it, every time I was around him, I was always reduced to that almost 12-year-old kid, you know, and as I reflect on his life today, it is still coming from the point of view and the perspective of a 12-year-old who was Henry Aaron every time he stepped out on that baseball diamond. Well, we ain't had no baseball diamond, it was just a field that we made. There we go. Man, we didn't actually have a baseball diamond. We just made up something and put some stuff down there, but I was always Henry Aaron. And so, you know, my heart is heavy, just like all of his fans are today. But, you know, we reflect and we hold with great fondness these memories that we can share that helps hopefully lessen the sting of losing someone like Henry Aaron.
Here's Hank Aaron for you. Our pal Aaron Boone can talk to anybody. He grew up in a major league clubhouse. His dad and his grandfather played the big league. So during the 2014 All-Star game, Booney told me, he said, "I got in an elevator today and Hank Aaron was in there and I couldn't even speak." And I said, "Why, Booney?" And he goes, "Because it's Hank Aaron."
It's Hank Aaron, man.
Craig Council told me a similar story when he was working in the Brewers front office. Hank Aaron is doing a speech on the stage, and he calls Craig Council out of the audience to come up and talk about what it's like for a Milwaukee kid, Council, to actually make it to the big leagues. And Council recalls saying to himself, "I can't go up there, Aaron." So, but he goes up there, and now Hank Aaron is talking to Craig Council on the stage, and Craig Council says to himself, "Oh my gosh, Aaron is asking me questions about baseball. This cannot be happening to me." That's how revered Hank Aaron was in the eyes of those who played and were around the game.
Bob, I'm glad you mentioned that it took, you know, him a long time to look back and enjoy the accomplishments he had. Tim, I don't know if you remember this, but after you did that broadcast with him, I called you the next day, and because I was just so struck by his joy and his happiness that he looked back on all those events with, and he could laugh and tell stories about it, because of course my impression of him when he played was this stoic, never changed expression, and you knew how difficult, or you didn't know. But you were aware of just the death threats he was getting and the pressure that was on him during that time. Bob, you mentioned about how long it took for him to get past that. Did you ever have a conversation with him about that and his experiences?
Yeah, no. And he was so poignant in that conversation that day in 1999, because, again, you have to understand, those death threats he was getting were very real, particularly in his mind and in his heart, because you have to realize that he had witnessed in his time the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the assassination of John F. Kennedy, the assassination of Malcolm X. So there are no hollow death threats for a Black man, and particularly a Black man in the Deep South. So you had to take this stuff real. And the weight of that. But, you know, Buster, those players who transitioned from the Negro Leagues carried the weight of their race on their shoulders anyway. They knew they had to succeed so that there would be an opportunity for the next guy. So Henry Aaron, remarkably, was still able to perform at such an incredible level, carrying the weight of a race of people on his shoulders, and then enduring what would have to be one of the most challenging times in the life of anyone, you know, at that time. Because you got to remember, we're 27 years removed at that time from Jackie Robinson breaking baseball's color barrier. And 27 years later, Henry Aaron is still he's still subjected to the same level of hate and vitriol that we saw with Jackie Robinson. And both men handled it with such grace, class, and dignity, and were still able to perform at such an incredible level. And when he hits 715, I'm sure he's not sure if he's going to make it around the bases. And when the two guys jump out on the field, I know you both remember this so well.
Yep.
And they were coming out to celebrate. But I think we all took a deep breath because we didn't know what they were coming to do. And you know, and yet he never harbored any ill will or bitterness. And that's what I've seen with all of the players from the Negro Leagues. They have an innateness about them that allowed them to forgive. You know, it didn't mean that they enjoyed the experience or even that they forgot the experience. It allowed them, though, to forgive those who perpetrated those kinds of experiences against them. And the human quality of Henry Aaron is what really makes him so special. Yeah, he's a great ball player, one of the greatest baseball players of all time. But Henry Aaron was every bit as great a human being as he was a ball player.
And Tim, I love hearing that joy in his voice because of everything that he had experienced, that, you know, near the end of his life, that he felt that joy. And you saw that firsthand.
Yeah. And the joy, of course, comes from the story that he tells. I mean, we've been over this. He got on that bus to go to pro ball. He didn't have any money in his pockets. He was hitting cross-handed at that time. That's how raw of a baseball player he was. But his great skill overcame everything. And on that, in that game, Buster, Bob, I asked Hank where those incredibly strong hands and wrists came from. And he said, well, you know, my dad was a boxer, so he had really hard and strong hands and wrists. And he said, and my dad used to deliver ice blocks to people. And he used to have to walk up these long flights of stairs carrying ice blocks in those tongs. And he said, and I used to go with him all the time. And he said, and I would carry those ice blocks up all these flights of stairs. He said, that's where my hands and my really strong wrists came from. And the delight in his eyes as he told those stories is just something that I will never forget.
One more for each of you. I'm going to let you go. Bob, start with you. Describe shaking his hand.
I don't even know if I can remember. It happened. But you know, and for me, shaking his hand and hugging him, you know, and I can't say I even remember the handshake because I was so doggone nervous, you know, but it was special. And to Tim's point, Buck O'Neill, the first time he sees Henry Aaron, Henry is with the Indianapolis Clowns. And they go out, Buster, to change lineup cards, and the manager for the Clowns was a guy named Buster Hayward. And so Buck says they go out to exchange the car, and he sees this kid, Aaron, batting in the third hole. And he knew all the players from the Clowns. And he said, well, Buster, who's this kid, Aaron? He said, oh, Buck, you got to see him. And Buck said, okay, well, we'll see what he got. Well, by the end of the day, Henry had gone 4-for-4 with 2 home runs. And Buster and Buck have dinner that night. And Buck said, he told Buster, he said, well, Buster, I ain't gonna have to worry about that kid Aaron when you come to Kansas City. He said, what you talking about, Buck? Oh, somebody gonna sign him. And true enough, the Braves signed him away, cross-handed hitting and all, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Tim, what was it like to shake his hand?
Oh my gosh, it was a vice grip. I'll never forget a couple of radio guys who are friends of ours, and we won't mention their names, told us, went on the air one day and said they went to some function and Willie Mays and Hank Aaron were there. And these two radio guys said, God, those guys are really small. So I went on the air with them. I said, did you shake either one of their hands? Shake Hank Aaron's hands? And you're going to tell me that's a small man? That guy was so unbelievably strong, as was Willie Mays. Absolutely as powerful a hand grip as you can find. So he might have played at 175 to start his career, but he had the hands and the wrist strength of a man 100 pounds heavier. That's how strong he was.
Guys, thanks for doing this. I love your stories. You know, what a loss for everybody.
Thank you, Buster, for having us on.
Yeah, absolutely, Buster, man. It's great to see you. I wish it was under better circumstances, but thank you for remembering my dear friend, the late, great Henry M.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Eduardo Perez, of course, is an analyst on Baseball Tonight on broadcast for ESPN. And your dad knew Henry Aaron very well, a fellow Hall of Famer, played against him. How did you hear about the news today, Eduardo?
Well, I actually heard of the news from actually one of our former colleagues, Tim Sullivan, the producer. He texted me and then, I just finished doing my morning show and I was doing some other research when all of a sudden it went all over Twitter and Tim Sullivan let me know. And, it's one of those moments where you start looking back at the times that you were able to share with one of the greats, if not the greats of the game, and Hank Aaron, which meant so much to the game on and off the field. So it takes you back to knowing him, and then obviously having to break the news to my father, I think, is always the toughest, especially during these times.
So tell me about that conversation when you talked to your dad.
Yeah, I called him around 10:50 in the morning Eastern time, and he answers the phone, and I'm like, did you hear the news? And he goes, what now? That's exactly what he said. And I said, it's Hank. And he goes, no. And he goes, oh man, are you kidding me? So it's heartbreaking because I had to do the same, letting him know when Don Sutton passed away earlier, and also when Tommy Lasorda passed away. So, so early in this year, it's just a continuation of what 2020 was with the last passing of a great Hall of Famer and Phil Negro, who passed in December 26. So it's just been, tough for the Hall of Fame family, and being a part of that family as a son, it's really heartbreaking to see.
Boy, and I've thought about that. Of course, no ceremony in 2020 because of the pandemic. And since the last ceremony in 2019, so many among the brethren have passed away. Tom Seaver, Bob Gibson, Lou Brock. And I was thinking about that as I was walking my dog back after I heard the news and I knew we were going to do the show. How different it'll be at Cooperstown when all those guys get back together in the summer 2021, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully they get back together. Hopefully by that time they're able to get back into the Ottosaga Hotel and share good times and memories and hopefully they'll be able to do what they usually do during that time, and it's a sit in the lobby or sit downstairs in the basement restaurant area and share good times and good memories. And I love going to Cooperstown because of that. I learned so much from sitting in a rocking chair, talking to Whitey Herzog, or just seeing the all-time greats walk one by the other. The last time I crossed paths with Hank Aaron was actually before the Atlanta conversation that we had in a game where it was Hank Aaron Day with ESPN, that we brought that up with Dave Fleming and Tim Kirchen, was at the lobby of the Ottosaga Hotel. And, just when you see him, you see history, you see all the everything that was told about him. I was able to see him at the end of his career, but to be able to really look back and look at the numbers and look at the videos, and is such a great and underrated player on the defensive side, which my dad always told me. He goes, he was a great defender. Don't forget about that. So Hank Aaron will definitely live in my memory for a long time. I even have one of his bats here with me signed from that day in Atlanta.
I wanted to ask you about that, because that really, the conversation that you and Tim and Dave had with him will always stay with me. I called Tim after it was over because, of course, he was known when he was a player as being someone who was stoic, and you didn't see a lot of range of emotions on his face. And when he was in the broadcast booth with you guys, I think that was summer 2018 or 2019, just the joy in him telling stories. And I called Tim after it was over, and I was like, do you think that, you know, that time it was so stressful for him because of the death threats, you know, the concern that he had every day to hear the, you know, the racist words that were aimed in his direction, that, you know, breaking Babe Ruth's record in the first 5 days of the 1974 season, he tied the record with a home run off Jack Billingham on April 4th. He breaks the record on April 8th with a home run off Al Downing. Did it take him a lot of years to really be able to look back and relax and have some fun with that? There you go. I mean, I just love that night and listen to you guys. And Tim said, I think that's the case, because he had such a great time with you guys. He was laughing and telling stories. You know, tell me about that night.
Oh, it was, you know what? That was probably the most nervous I've ever been in television from probably my first day doing Baseball Tonight when I first did it back in 2006 of the postseason, being sitting there next to a legend. And again, I grew up around legends. I grew up around the Big Red Machine, but Hank Aaron is just what he did, you know, okay, what he did on the field, great, but what he did off the field, showing courage, going out there, especially in Atlanta during that time, it definitely brought back, you know, just how great he really was and how he was able to focus on the field. And one thing that I got out of it as a player was that he told me, he goes, I was a guest hitter. I was a guest hitter my entire career. And I was like, wait a second, what do you mean? He goes, in order for you to be successful, you have to be a guest hitter. And the reason he said that was, he goes, because you have to know the counts. You have to know the situation. You have to know the pitcher. So he was a student of the game and trusting what he had studied, and he was able to apply it to his craft. And obviously the ability had a lot to do with it, but the strength that he had in his hands and the hand-eye coordination with the memory that he was able to slow down the game, the mindset of slowing down the game, is, it was just, to me, I marveled at it. And I also have to say this, I took a lot of pleasure in sitting next to my left was Tim Kirchen, and Tim was like a kid in a candy store next to Hank Aaron. And to me, this is what baseball is all about. Dreams do come true. Even if you didn't play the game, you get to sit next to him and you get to have a baseball conversation. And it was awesome to witness and awesome to be a part of.
You mentioned about his approach to hitting. I was reading quotes today where he was talking about he knew that nobody could get a good fastball past him. And I remember, you know, when I would talk to legends or people who played against him, they would always talk about his quick wrists. And he, like Yogi Berra, you know, Yogi Berra, when I covered the Yankees, was someone who'd walk through the clubhouse, you're like, man, he wasn't very big, right? And Hank Aaron wasn't that big. He was not a large man by any stretch of the imagination. As a baseball player, what jumped out at you when you saw highlights of him playing?
How strong, and you're right, how strong the wrists were and still was at the time when we interviewed him, how big those wrists and forearms were. But I love the scissor kick. If you look at, and it's something that a lot of players don't do. Paul Konerko was able to do that late in his career consistently. There are some guys that use the back leg. In his case, it was the right leg, where as soon as he was going through with a swing, the back leg would give away, avoiding and preventing him from cutting off his swing, being consistent. He was able to drive the ball to right center field with authority. If you left it in, he was able to be quick enough to bring his hands in and keep the ball fair. And one of the big reasons was, it's because he used a thick handle bat. And that's one thing that a lot of players back in the day used to do. Heavier bat, thicker handle bat. It's harder to be able to pull the ball and break your wrist that way to keep, and it's better said, it's easier to keep the ball fair instead of pulling it foul. He just had that ability, and we were able to witness it. I was able to witness it late in his career. But my goodness, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. The person, the genuine ability. I'll tell you this. It's the most nervous I've ever been asking for an autograph. We have two bats there, Buster. I kid you not. I was like, Hank, would you please sign these? I thought he was going to say no on air. But yeah. You know what? That just tells you how humble he was, no matter how great he was, that he was able to not only play the game, but people don't realize that he was also a general manager of the game. And, you know, he was one of the big reasons why Brian Snitker is where he is. And I think that speaks to itself of giving the people and having the compassion and empathy to be able to open up and listen to the younger generation coming up and giving them an ability to and a forum to be able to succeed in this game.
When you talked to him that night, I mentioned how it surprised me how joyful he was looking back and the laughs and the absolute fun he had. As you were listening to those stories, were you surprised like I was? Because of the nature of him as a player, and he always was known as the guy who would never deviate in his home run trot. His elbows would be very distinct in the way that he would circle the bases. He never outwardly smiled. He never showed up the pitcher. I mean, the idea of a bat flip, no chance of anything like that. But when you heard the absolute joy that he told those stories, and that jumped out at me. Did it for you when, as he was talking?
Oh, my. Did it ever jump out? You know, that's one of my – I grew up, and obviously when my dad played, my mom was always with my dad. So I grew up in my grandfather's house. My grandfather had great stories. He lived until he was 97 years of age. I was blessed to hear a lot of his stories. And he would talk about Hank Aaron because he was a big baseball fan. But most importantly, it's sitting down and learning from those stories, just sitting. And it was like grandpa was talking to you again. You know, you sit back, you lean forward, and you just take it all in and realize. And that's one thing that I'm grateful for. I didn't take this for granted at all, because we are, there's a phrase in Spanish, que todos estamos prestados. We are all loaned here on this earth. And you know, we were able to sit down and have a candid conversation with probably the greatest player of all time, where a lot of people would say it's other. Hank Aaron is in the top of that class. And he sat and watched the Braves game with us and was able to talk genuinely about the game that he loves and the game that actually opened doors to so many.
You know, the other day we did a podcast with Jessica Mendoza after the Jared Porter incident. And I related to Jess how I remember there was a situation where right after a playoff game we did in 2017, an Astros player attacked her on Twitter, you know, took shots at her. I remember just the sadness I felt for Jess after that game, feeling like I was heartbroken that her experience was diminished. Can you imagine what it was like for Henry Aaron, you know, as he's going through the end of his career and he's getting closer to passing Babe Ruth, and the notes that were written to him, the threats that were sent to him, and none of that was something that it was all foisted upon him. And in the same way, I think that's why I was so happy that when he spoke with you guys, he spoke back and looked back with such joy, because that was such a difficult time. Can you imagine what he went through?
No, really. It's really difficult. That's why I'm grateful for Hank. That's why I'm grateful if it's Ozzie Virgil, who was the first Dominican player in the big leagues. I'm grateful for Jackie. I'm grateful for everyone that was able to open the doors. And, you know, I had an advantage that I was able to see, witness what baseball meant to a lot of people from different races. And it's hard to put yourself in those shoes. It's hard to be able to walk and say, yeah, I could imagine what it would have been like to be Hank Aaron with the pressure of having to break one of the greats in Babe Ruth, his record with all the, you know, all the letters and stuff, the hate mail that he was getting, that to me is unthinkable. And he was able to do it. And for that, again, sitting next to baseball royalty for that amount of time was spectacular. And Buster, I must emphasize, I grew up around baseball royalty, and Hank Aaron put me to awe when I sat there for those 5 to 6 innings that he was there with us.
Real quick, before you go, tell me about shaking his hand.
Oh, man. We're talking about I think he puts Johnny Bench's hands to shame. I think he puts Tim Kirchen's hands to shame. They were huge. It's not only that they were big, they were thick, too. Those fingers were thick and strong. And the best part about it is when we did the interview, we put the bat right in front of him and he grabbed the bat and it was like, it brought him, I mean, he was so comfortable holding that bat in his hand. And he gave us even more details to the stories because of the comfort zone of having that bat in his hand. And to this day, that bat that he had in his hand, I have it right here with me.
Eduardo, thanks for your memories.
You got it, Buster.
Well, that's it for today. My thanks to Bob Kendrick, to Tim Kirkchin, Eduardo Perez. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.